This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Yesterday, we talked about the highest paid athletes on the planet, according to Forbes. I got some updated numbers on some of the specifics of those athletes I want to go through with you in just a second here on Grant and Danny. So welcome back, 106.7 The Fan, on this Tuesday. Bill's been waiting really patiently. Wanted to talk about Wes Unseld with us. Wes Unseld passing at 74 years old. And we open up the phones for you guys. We'll take your calls and your memories and recollections as they come in at 800-636-1067. Bill, go ahead. Thanks for the time.
Hi, Grant, Danny. Good to talk to you.
You too,
buddy. This is a sad day for Washington sports fans. I remember Wes Unseld's career very vividly because I was watching him from the time he came over from Baltimore and they started playing here in Washington at the old Cap Center. 2 points I wanted to make about Unseld as a player, and Danny touched on one of them earlier, is his ability to set picks in the open court. Too many times you would see guys run into him and not just fall down, but actually crumble down to the court. And I heard this more than one time that he would chastise his own players for not running opposing defenders into him hard enough. And the other point I wanted to bring up was, Wes Unseld was not known as a scorer in the pros, but a lot of people forget he was a big scorer when he was in college at Louisville. When he came to the pros, they didn't need him to score. They needed him to get rebounds and keep the lane clear. Well, one game against the Los Angeles here in Washington, he scored 20 points. Well, after the game, the media crowded around him to find out what was going on, and he was asked, "How come we don't see more 20-point games from you, Wes?" And without missing a beat, Unseld shot back, "Because they don't run any plays for me." So that was probably about the highest point total he ever had during a regular season, I remember.
That's great. Good phone call. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate it. And yeah, we'll take him as you got him, 800-636-1067. Unseld did not have the opportunity to make some of the money that the best make today. The game has changed, literally and figuratively. But we went through the top 10 list yesterday, according to Forbes, the highest paid players. So there were some notes that came out on this and some things that I saw. So I told you Roger Federer was number one, and I was shocked that it wasn't Ronaldo
Amazing
or Messi.
Yeah.
I would have thought it was soccer. He barely edged them out in fairness. He earned $106.3 million, Ronaldo $105, and Messi $104. Here was the breakdown, though. In terms of salary or winnings, Ronaldo $60 million, Messi $72 million, Federer only $6.3 million. He had $100 million he earned over the last 12 months in endorsements. $100 million. Nobody else on this list is over 60. LeBron James and Tiger Woods are the two guys at 60. The best tennis player in the world over the last 10 years, Roger Federer, $100 million. Now, in terms of endorsements, don't feel bad for Ronaldo or Messi. I mean, those guys made $45 and $32 million respectively. But if you actually comp the salary and the earnings, it's crazy that Federer, who made 54 and about 65 less than those two guys, respectively in salary and winnings, made more money overall based on the endorsements. Neymar, the breakdown, $70 million in salary, $25 million in endorsements. LeBron, And you start to get to the American athletes, obviously their money's coming off the field, really. So LeBron, $28.2 million on the court, $60 million in endorsements, number five on the list at $88.2 million. Steph Curry, $30.4 million, $44 in endorsements, $74.4 million, sixth on the list. Durant, $28.9 million, $35 million in endorsements, $63.9 million is seventh. Tiger Woods, by far the lowest amount in salary or earnings in the top 20 at $2.3 million. But he got $60 million in endorsement money that him up to number eight on this list. And then you have Cousins, just $2.5 million in endorsements to go with $58 million in earnings, and Carson Wentz, $55.1 million in earnings, $4 million in endorsements, rounding out the top 10.
Surprising on a couple of those. I mean, first off, is Tiger still has that much endorsement money? I mean, I remember the big story after, you know, the incident and everything that happened with his ex-wife. That was sort of the, you know, all the tapes that came out and the text messages and all these other kind of things. I seem to remember endorsers running away from him or companies running away from him.
And I guess that's changed.
I guess they've come back in a major way. So there you go. And as I've said, you know, he's not the same golfer that he was, and he participates sporadically, I think, at best. But that was pretty interesting to me. I mean, these, not in America, obviously, although to some degree they're superstars, but the guys that up at the top, the world-class superstar soccer players that are known and beloved in multiple continents around the world, you know, that's that nice balance, right, of incredible high salary because butts in seats, eyeballs, plus those endorsements. So that makes sense. They're up there. Again, I can't stress how irrelevant tennis is to so many people, and it's just stunning to me to see Roger Federer up there at the top ahead of the three incredibly handsome world superstars that are great at soccer.
So here are some other really interesting facts about this list. You look at the top 100, obviously, and you can break everything down however you want to. But a few things that caught my attention. First time we've ever had a tennis player number one with Federer. First time since 2016, in 4 years, there have been two women in the top 100, Naomi Osaka and Serena Williams. Previously, it was Williams and Sharapova. So you're going to get that heavy tennis influence. There were 21 countries represented. Again, this is a global list. The U.S. led the way with 68 athletes. The U.K. had five. Spain had four. France had three. Brazil had two, presumably both soccer players. Germany, two. Japan, two. And 14 other countries had one athlete. If you look at the sports breakdown, the NBA crushed on this list. And I think that has to do with shoe deals and endorsement deals. You know, these guys don't wear helmets. They don't wear masks. They are more recognizable. You think about just icons that bridge past sports in this country. I think basketball is probably the first thing you think of. But there were 35 basketball players on the list, 31 football players, 14 soccer players, 6 tennis stars, 4 boxers, 2 in the top 20, 4 golfers, 3 racers. And I think that's more Formula One slanted than NASCAR.
Yeah, I've seen
one
all three. Daniel
player.
Ricciardo, Sebastian Vettel, and
Lewis.
Why am I blanking on the guy? Lewis Hamilton, yes, thank you.
And one baseball player in the top 100. Now, you could take that as a massive hit against baseball. That's COVID-19. These guys haven't been paid anything for this season yet. So you're taking away, like, Clayton Kershaw and some of these guys' salaries.
Harper.
Kershaw is the one guy who's on the list at this point. He made the cut. Down from number 15 in 2019 to where he ended up. Now, you got one MMA guy, and that's Conor McGregor. You got one cricket player. I don't even know who that was. But there's your list. I mean, so if you're baseball, even if not for the coronavirus pandemic, you just don't see, like, Mike Trout. Harper's all over the place, so he would probably be really high on this list, I'm guessing. But it's so much harder, I think, in that sport than in basketball or football, where you've got a combined 66 athletes in the top 100 to market yourself, because your shoe deal is kind of the whole deal. Like Curry and Durant are 6 and 7. Those guys, I think of them, and I think of the fact that they own their own brand now, and that's how you do this.
A couple other funny notes. Cam Newton in the top 100 doesn't have a quarterback job, which is interesting. It's also funny that
is
that
he really?
Guys, yeah, he's in the 90s. I
so
must
that's
say.
So that's based on last year's salary, obviously. Mm-hmm. He hasn't made anything this year, but then he must have a ton of endorsements to go along. Do you have the number that he's worth next to him or no?
I don't have it. I just have.
I'm just imagining he made 20 plus million as a player.
So here we go.
He's got another 10 or 20 in endorsements.
Endorsements 5.5, salary winning 16.7 million for a total of 22 and change. There you go.
Okay, so then that gets you into the top 100.
Mm-hmm.
That makes me even more surprised, though, that there aren't more baseball players in the top 100 if 22 gets you into the top 100.
I know. It seems there must be some calculation that I'm kind of missing. Because, again, the only representative from baseball.
Remember just
is
where
Kershaw.
It is. It's from, I think the dates were the end of June to the end of June, or maybe the end of May to the end of May. Mm-hmm. But it's basically not even their full salary. It's a couple of months of last year's salary and a couple of months of this year's salary.
Well,
if you don't have a salary this year, and it's only half or whatever of your salary from last year, then making $35 million is irrelevant because how much of that did you make between June to September or whatever it is? You see what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, yeah. There are a couple of really sneaky basketball players in there that you just wouldn't expect that make that top 100. Like Chris Middleton is in the top 100 for the Milwaukee Bucks. Nice player, don't get me wrong. But top 100 in the world? Tobias Harris, Mike Conley Jr., DeMar DeRozan. It's no wonder that basically other athletes are just so jealous of NBA players. Right, when it comes to their own brand, their marketing, their visibility, you know, how much control they have, how much autonomy they have, and then the amount of just the volume of money they make. A superstar like LeBron, Kevin Durant, yeah, you're the face of the whole world. Like Mike Conley, very solid player, nice player, 71st in the world in terms of money made over this past year. It's just an interesting dichotomy.
Yeah, how influenced the list is by basketball is big. I guess one of my major takeaways, and I know you don't care about boxing, but basically, I hate to say dead, but how dead boxing seems to be.
Yep.
In the sense that, like, there was a time in my childhood where the heavyweight champion or the heavyweight contenders were very visible, universally known. You know, they couldn't walk through a mall without 50 people following them around. They couldn't go anywhere. They were superstars. Now, there are two boxers in the top 20. Tyson Fury, who's 11, who just beat Deontay Wilder to unify some belts, and then Wilder himself, who's 20. Wilder made $46 million in the last year as a boxer because before that Fury fight, he'd obviously been on top of the world. He had $500,000 in endorsements in the last year. Think about that. Prior to losing to Fury, kind of the guy considered the heavyweight in the division, maybe the most popular boxer in the country, $500,000 in endorsements. Steph Curry's doing $44 million. Tiger Woods is doing $60 million. Roger Federer, a tennis player, all due respect, $100 million. Deontay Wilder's doing $500,000.
Crazy. Name 10 tennis players that aren't Roger Federer that are dudes. I could think of Djokovic the other guy that's really good, that is good on clay?
No, Nadal, you're sleeping.
Nadal, that's him.
I think I might be able to get close to 10. Do they have to all be active, though?
Yeah, active tennis players right now.
All right, let's play this game. Don't look it up. Let's not cheat.
I can't.
All right.
I just tapped out.
Did you say Novak Djokovic?
Yeah, I said the Djokovic.
Okay, Federer, Nadal.
Yes, yeah, I said besides Federer, name 10 guys.
Okay, so now I'm at 2. Well, actually, there's no way I'm going to be able to do this. I was, like, really confident. John Isner, does he still play?
I have no idea.
All right, I'm going to say John Isner.
I have no idea. I can't fact-check any of these guys.
Sam Querrey, does that guy still play? I'm just thinking of American tennis players. All right, Tommy says yes, that's 2. How about, Pete Medhurst is breaking things right now. Nothing annoys Pete more than when people sit on the air and don't know things about obscure sports that he is sized about. He is so mad right now. I'm trying to think of one more just so it's not utterly embarrassing. That's pretty much it.
Right.
That's what I got for
you. I can name Nadal. And I struggle to do that, by the way. Djokovic and Federer. I can't name 10 men's tennis players. And that guy's the number one. You see what I'm saying? Like, it used to be such a huge deal.
Dollars.
Like, I watched the hell out of men's tennis with Boris Becker, Evan Lendl, Jimmy Connors, the McEnroe, Pete Sampras during his rise, Michael Chang, Andre Agassi. I cared a lot. The whole world did, it felt like. And it has just fallen into the abyss.
I thought of one more guy. I don't think we're close to 10. There's a tennis player named Tennis Sandgren or something. His name is actually Tennis, and he always says controversial, terrible things, or he has in the past. Yeah, that's I remember real? This. His name is Tennis. I can't tell you much more about him, but his name is Tennis, and I think it's like sand green.
Is it spelled like tennis?
There's a Y in there somewhere.
Or like tennis or something?
That's yeah. Wild. Maybe it's not even said tennis. So we're at 5. The journey continues, baby. We're getting there. Grant and Danny, you're locked into 106.7. The Fan. Is there going to be baseball? Our buddy from MLB Network Radio, Casey Stern, joins us in 15 minutes. Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. I saw this headline and I just clicked and read a little bit on it, but I didn't know if you had any more intel or had seen this, Danny. High school baseball and softball returned to Iowa yesterday. The Whoa. First sanctioned high school sports to return since the coronavirus pandemic shut down sports in March. Practices resumed. They have a long list of safety guidelines. Temperature checks, no use of the dugout, required sanitizing for shared equipment after use. It was 11 p.m. Eastern last night. Iowa had over 19,000 confirmed cases, 555 deaths. Now, at that time, games were able to start, though, on June 15th. So you get 13 days to ramp up. I'm assuming this means they're just the schools that want to participate can make up their seasons. Like, I have a million questions about how this is working. But this is what I'm reading here. High school baseball and softball has returned to Iowa on Monday. This is the first sanctioned high school sports to return since the pandemic shutdown. That's all I know. It gives me some hope for high school football this fall because I got this kid in the neighborhood here I just feel awful for. So you walk out of my house and you walk about 150 feet to the left, and a young man has drawn with chalk on the sidewalk basically every 10 yards marked off like an area to do a 40-yard dash to time himself. Mm-hmm. And I see him running the 40-yard dash all the time. He put up a tire that he's tied to a post in his yard, and he's like throwing the football and running around. And I talked to him for a couple minutes when I was walking the president the other day, and he goes to Hayfield High School here locally. He's going to be a rising sophomore. He's trying to be the quarterback on the sophomore team. And, I mean, this kid is grinding. Like, he's working during this pandemic. Now, we didn't mention anything about, like, COVID-19. Will there be a season? And I don't have the heart to tell him. I'm not sure if there's going to be football. But I think about him all the time now. I'm like, gosh, can you imagine? Like, that's your big passion in life is wanting to play high school football. You get it for a few years, and one of those might get ripped away from you. But this gives me a little bit of hope if there are states that are already trying to make up spring sports. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's going to be a lot of them, but that's not a bad sign as far as high school football goes, is it?
No, it's a good sign. I mean, I think about this because we talked about this before. Obviously, I've done plenty of things since my high school career ended, and you don't have the world perspective because you've never been out of school. You just kind of keep matriculating. You go to the next place in line, and you do what you're supposed to do. But your prom, your senior year, your homecoming game, these are enormous, monumental moments in your young life. And then as you get out, you realize, oh, you know what's way more important is, you know, the birth of my child or, you know, a million other things that we know about life experience. But at that point, you don't know. I think of this. When I threw a temper tantrum after we lost a game and broke stuff in the locker room and I got suspended for a game, like, that was the worst thing ever for me at that point. One game, Grant, one baseball game was taken away from me. And that I still think about that, those emotions and how awful that was. I can't imagine that times infinite numbers where it's nothing of their doing. I was responsible for that. It was my fault. I did something that led to me getting suspended. These kids did nothing wrong. They just minded their business. They're just doing everything they're supposed to do, and all that work in a snap is taken away from them. I have lots of empathy for kids in that kind of situation.
Yeah, I'm just reading from USA Today here. The scene at Des Moines Hoover High School softball field Monday set the illusion of a normal June morning. Players were strung across the outfield running various drills, softball bags, gloves, bats, balls, sat along the fence. Coaches offered direction and encouragement as long as an hour after practice had wrapped up. Nearby Hoover athletic director Jacob Burke smiled. Feels good to be back in action, he said, as the baseball team was training as well. I mean, I can't quite wrap my head around this and grasp this just because in every state things are so different. And here in Virginia, there would be no consideration or talk of this. But I guess my question would be, Like, who is playing? Are all the schools in Iowa coming back? Do you choose if you want to come back or not? So if there are 10 teams, they're going to play the local teams. Are you playing a full schedule? Are you trying to have a state championship in July or August? Is it just an activity to get those players some exercise? I mean, how formal is all of this?
I don't know.
I'm not sure that I really get this. It says summer sports were originally supposed to begin practicing on May 4th, games on May 25th. The pandemic forced the outright cancellation of the spring season, put the summer in jeopardy. On May 20th, Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds gave the green light for high school sports to return. But there aren't, that I know of, there aren't summer high school sports. They're not saying this is like American Legion. They're calling this a high school softball team. So that's what I'm kind of confused about.
Yeah, same here. I don't know how the logistics would work necessarily. And like, let's say in one district it's worse than another. In one district you've got no cases. Are you going to have, you know, I just think of locally here in Northern Virginia. Like, McLean is going to play Langley, but, you know, you're not going to have Battlefield involved simply because they can't do it. Or I don't know. I mean, whatever the high schools are. But, like, if you can't get everybody, do you still have it? Do you have partial? I don't know. It's one of those things where I understand the desire to get everybody back, but I've got logistical questions. And I think the theme of this time is just do the best you can. We know it's not going to be perfect. Let's just do the best we can.
Yeah. And it looks like they basically said they're going to be spending at least the first several days just recoaching and re-educating and legislating, not going to your face, washing your hands. This is how we're going to do everything now. So it's not even baseball practice. It's more just learning how to get by with people around you playing sports during the pandemic, and then eventually they'll start practicing. But they got a chance to play games in a couple of weeks. I have a million questions. We could somehow talk to either Gene Berger, who is the executive director in Iowa of the Girls Athletic Union, who's quoted in this story, or Jacob Burke, who is the athletic director at Hoover High School. Maybe that's something we could try to work on in the days to come. You're listening to Grant and Danny. Dara's tracked down our buddy Casey Stern. He's going to be on with us next, MLB Network Radio. The question we've got for him, how productive was yesterday? I mean, everyone's acting as though yesterday was this huge step forward and we might get baseball. Is that the case? You're listening to The Fan. Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. June is a couple days old in 2020. We're with you until 2 today, each and every day, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. here in D.C. If you got friends who haven't been listening, spread the word. Get them in. It's too late to get in on the ground floor, I guess, Danny, but make sure they start tuning in at some point. Never too late to be a part of what we've got growing here on G&D middays on 106.7 The Fan. But right now, let's go to the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Welcome onto the show. Friend of the program, Casey Stern. You hear him on MLB Network Radio. You watch him via Turner Sports, hosting NBA and studio shows for them. Casey, I want to talk about yesterday's developments. It seems to be billed as a major progressive step that the players responded with a deal the owners weren't going to accept. And then the owners came back and said, well, maybe we can do the prorated thing if we play around 50 games. Do you think we're closer to a season than we were 24 hours ago?
I know we're closer to the ground. I mean, the intro is ground level, and then you intro me, where you and I know because we're close to the ground level, which is with the dogs and cats falling from the baseball sky will hit us last, TP. And I hope you guys are doing well and all the best to your families, obviously. I think here's what we're forgetting, and I go back to, like, you know, Civil War, the Guns N' Roses. You know, what we have here is a failure to communicate, because what we're not communicating, I think, to the public enough. These things happen in every negotiation of any kind. There is always bartering. There's always, I will tell you what I am looking for, not really my last offer. It just doesn't happen publicly. So I think the first problem that baseball had was, guys, they, unlike the NBA, and really – you should probably follow the model of the association. They normally handle things the right way. They put dates on things. And when you put dates on things, when there are no fans that are going in the building anyway, and we start to now, you know, hunker down waiting to see how are they going to get the 67-page plus whatever pieces are to be named letter of the medical side suited, and everybody in camp in time to go play July 4th, Now you've got time constraints. The negotiations normally don't have those because most deadlines, as we know, are really just something that gets thrown out there. I remember out by you, the Chris Davis, remember, we are not going to stand for this anymore. And then they stood for it a week later for like $10 million more, I think, afterwards. You can't stand on ceremony. So I think it is progressive. I do think that, Grant, it is going the right direction. But the biggest issue is never going to be fixed, and that is the fact that the owners say that they make X, and here's what they spend, and it's Y. The players think and or know, depending upon which side you are, and they're probably both true, they probably think it and it is probably accurate, that those numbers are not exactly what the owners are taking in. And when they're not going to open the books and they don't know exactly what percentages are being worked on, you can't tell me that you want to then, you know, feel the pain that the owners are putting out there when you're making $2 billion as a net worth and you can't spend $1 million to keep your minor leaguers employed. So, you know, until we get that, it's going to come down to what will the players be willing to give in? What will the owners be willing to give? And I say this, and it's an important part of it. If the CBA was 3 or 4 years away, this is done already. Because the CBA is so close, it's posturing because anything they say, do, any kind of an idea that they follow through with, all are going to be used against them in a court of law, if you will, just, what, a year from now. And I think that's a big part of this. They're all taking stances knowing the CBA is right behind in that shadow.
Okay, so go into that. I think it's colored almost anything MLB has done over the last, you know, calendar year, I would say. When everything from the Astros, the handling of that and the investigation, not wanting to run afoul of the MLB Players Association, and just sort of granting all those guys immunity in exchange for very light sentences, to these negotiations here, I get the sense that everything is with an eye towards next year and, you know, either a line in the sand or avoiding acrimony. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I honestly, Danny, I think that's dead on. I think when you look at it, nobody wants to, because look, if you take the DH, right? We knew that was coming, so it's different. But let's imagine that they said, oh, that's never going to happen. And all of a sudden, there's a universal DH for 50 games, right? And it works. What do you think happens next year? It would happen. Now, I know in that case, it was already efforting towards there. But what about some of these other things? What about sharing in money percentages? You know, look, the owners in this sport, whether they say it or not, have always wanted to have the similar kind of a cap, most of them, that the other sports have. And even now, when you look at George Steinbrenner, the late, and the ones that are still there running, even the Yankees fit into the category of telling you about luxury tax as if they are going to be hurt by that money. Look, I always tell people, go take $5 on a windy day, open the window like in that Seinfeld Even Steven episode, let it float out the window. That's the luxury tax to these owners. They're worth billions. So they have already shown us they are looking to save money everywhere they can. And I don't want to tell you how much they spend. And to me, it's going to be, what are they willing to put out publicly? Because, look, court of public opinion, you know, I remember people said, I'm never watching football again in Philadelphia after Michael Vick with the dogs. I love animals. They all sold out next year. You know, we're all fickle. So we're not going to go away forever. And I think the owners know that and understand that. They're trying to bait the players in with the idea of, hey, look, how bad do you want to look in the public when there's a crisis and illness and people are dying and sick everywhere and unemployed by saying that you, Blake Snell, are worried about what you're making after taxes.
Casey Stern on Grant and Danny here on 106.7 The Fan. And you can follow him on Twitter, and he's insightful when it comes to not just baseball but basketball. How do you think this will sort itself out? How many games do we end up playing? Do you think there will be a season? And if there's not, how long could that hurt baseball?
I think, let me start with the end. It would hurt the players more than the owners. And, you know, hurt baseball overall. Grant, I would say this. I mean, look, we already had, you know, somebody snuck into the warehouse where the balls are all made, ruined them all, and we can't figure out who, quote-unquote, would have done it. And then we got the signs. I mean, you know, baseball is baseball. So people who love it are going to watch it. This sport's always had a problem with their lack of understanding of marketing, which is a huge part of it, of not getting those other fans of other sports involved. That's going to continue either way, but they're going to make so much TV money, as you and I both know, they don't care anyway. And think about it this way. If they play 50 games, how much do you think those places, like let's say Amazon or anywhere, Fresh Direct, any of the food, the places that now are important to society are going to pay for that 60 seconds in that one game if there's only 50 of them? So they're still going to make some of that money back that the players don't get. And the players in baseball, unlike Steph Curry, can't make $80 million on their brand off the field. So I think The players get hurt most by not playing. The owners still have tons of money, and the sport eventually at some point will come back and not be a big deal. I think as far as how much they'll play, I think they will play because at some point it's like, okay, somebody spilled milk. We can all complain who did it. Are we just going to leave it there? Someone's got to clean it at some point. They're going to play rather than take no money on both sides. I'm guessing 75, 80 games. And the thing to me that I really hope they do is get rid of this early July date. Because think about this. I was talking to a former player about this 2 days ago, guys. We think about spring training, right? We know these players are creatures of habit. Sometimes drives you nuts. Why is a closer complaining? He's not in a safe situation, et cetera. But these creatures of habit have had their own habits, not being watched, isolated for months. They might come in like the old Nintendo hockey game where there was a small, medium, and fat guy. We have no idea what we're going to look at, right? We have no idea how many pitches they can throw. I'm sure the doctors have aggregates they've already built up with the Dodgers to tell us how many no-hitters they're going to stop from happening. But all of those questions got to be answered. Take the date away. Do you really care? Wouldn't you rather have it happen and happen the right way August 1 than not have a season because they missed some deadline? I think they need to push that date and get it out of context entirely.
Casey, I was one skinny guy and three fat guys. Skinny guy was for face-offs and maybe some puck handling. What was your lineup?
I've always gone with the fat guy because I feel like if they ate a lot before the game, they're probably as happy as I am playing it while I'm munching. So we're good.
I love it. And ultimately, you said you think it settles around 75 or whatever it is. What concessions have to be made? What concessions have to be made by each side to get there?
I think most likely, I think the league is going to have to accept that whatever they saw in that March document was not exactly as written. And when you look at the writing, look, it does say in good faith, both sides, et cetera. But depending upon who you believe, and I know today there's even been emails to writers back and forth from Tony Clark and from the Players Association, you know, did they say that without fans it's one way and with it's another? What are we going to do, barter over this? You want to go to, like, Judge Judy? Should we go to the People's Court, let Judge Judy decide? At some point, they're going to have to give up this March thing. And I think that's their biggest give because it takes away just simply, hey, we're getting prorated at this amount. So they're probably going to have to in some way come off of that. And I think the owners, to me, they're not going to open the books. They know they can't. They need the players because nobody wants to go see the executives go play and try and turn a double play. So I think for them, they're going to have to give up some of the stranglehold in terms of the way they're handling the percentages. And for me, one thing I wish they would have done, but it's too late now. And, you know, I'm glad, you know, the Nationals and other teams follow Twitter. Poor A's jump out first. First one at the buffet, back to food. Never a good thing, man. Everybody always gives you that stink eye. A's get out there and say, no, we're not paying anyone. Oh, wait, everyone else is paying someone? No, we didn't mean it, really. I wish they would have taken the money and let the owners say to the players or vice versa, hey, look, if this is the percentage you want, then take part of this percentage and pay the minor leaguers across the board of every team. And they should have together united to make that stand. But that's going back, funneling this whole conversation and the conversation with them for a month. The problem, they really don't understand.
Casey, always enjoyable. Thanks for the info, man. And hopefully we'll have you on to talk about baseball games at some point this summer, dude.
Well, I mean, I'm happy to talk to you about the home run I hit in MLB The Show or, like, the season in NHL 20 anytime you get
it. Not as good.
Hey, well, honestly, if things keep up, we'll probably be interviewing you about that in about 6 weeks at this juncture.
Hey, thanks, man, Casey. I'm just hoping Daniel Jones can get under center. That's where we're at. Enjoy, guys. All the best.
I hear you. You as well. Casey Stern. Again, you hear him on MLB Network Radio, and you watch him during halftime and pregame on Turner Sports' NBA coverage. He's at Casey Stern on Twitter. This date in Nats history, plus a huge date in Major League Baseball history in years past. I'll tell you why next right here on The Fan.
There's been a lot of talk about how horrible the rioting and looting is. That is no way to demonstrate. But people should think about the fact that Colin Kaepernick tried to demonstrate peacefully. What did he get? He got ostracized. He lost his job. He was blackballed. That was a peaceful protest about an issue that is very real. And no one could acknowledge that. We got to get to the point where we take these people seriously and acknowledge the wrongs that they are trying to identify and right them. That's the way that we make progress.
That was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar on ESPN. In fact, he was on NBC's Rich Eisen show today, and I thought his words were perfect. He was asked by Rich Eisen what he would tell today's young athletes who are getting involved, because, as you know, Danny, he's been an activist, and culturally he's been involved in causes for many, many years. And he said to them, be calm, speak the truth, make friends with people who don't look like you. And he finished by saying, if we can do that, we're going to turn this whole thing around. But, I mean, in 2012, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was named a cultural ambassador at the White House. I mean, this is a guy who's spent much of his life writing for Time, so many endeavors post-playing career, trying to do what athletes are doing this week. So he is someone, understandably, that the networks have been reaching out to, and he's had some sage advice during this time.
I think it's well said by you and by Kareem, honest. I mean, again, you touched on it. You could agree, disagree in general with anything that Kareem may say, but I will tell you that you can't accuse him of not being thoughtful. You can't accuse him of, you know, not having a strong set of convictions and beliefs, and these aren't just sort of things that he just snapped his fingers and came up with overnight. That is a learned life experience, incredible journeyed gentleman, you know, who, whether, you know, his everything from Powell Memorial in high school to maybe the greatest college player of all time, I think he probably was, to the ridiculous NBA career that he had, where he's universally accepted as a top 10 player of all time. And then you mentioned the activism and how thoughtful and the writings and different things that he's done. What a set of accomplishments for a legend.
Yeah. And there's nothing, you know, from the clip we just played, I don't think that you can disagree with necessarily, right? I mean, he's condemning something that shouldn't be happening, which is the looting and the rioting, and he's saying this is a real issue. But he has been a voice of reason for a long time for athletes, and he is one now advocating and trying to help show what should and shouldn't be done now to keep things peaceful during a time of turmoil in America. I want to get to a date in Major League Baseball, June 2nd, 2010, what happened on that day and why it's so important in the sports history, but it is time for this date in Nationals history right now on G&D.
The 2-1 pitch. Hit hard in the gap right center field, and this is going to roll all the way to the wall. Blanco is home. Here comes Castilla. Right behind is Bird. A bases-clearing double. And Bennett has come through again. The Nationals take an 8-6 lead. Five RBIs tonight for Gary Bennett. Can you believe it?
Gary Bennett, called by Dave Shea. That is about as old school a Nats call as you're going to find, all the way back to year one, 15 years ago in 05. They went into the eighth inning trailing 6-3. They played five runs off Braves relievers to get an 8-6 win. Gary Bennett, there's your answer for a beer at a bar when they open back up.
Oh, dude, that is a deep cut. That is there was this one concert that I had a bootleg recording of the famous band that nobody else has heard. Oh, is that a good one? Man, oh, man. I think the Nats, that start a huge winning streak? Is that one of those things? They've had another huge winning streak that they tied. Remember we did all Nats shows in 2014, one of our first couple years doing the show. But I think they ripped off 10 straight wins there, didn't they?
Not sure. My memory is on the mid-June run of the 05 Nationals, just not that powerful anymore, Danny.
Yeah,
so I'd
sorry.
Have to do some digging to be able to help you out there. I can't do it right now. But the date, June 2nd, I mentioned, something that happened in Major League Baseball today. Well, how about going back in time to this date in 2010, a decade ago to the day, Ken Griffey Jr. announced his retirement from baseball after a 22-year career that netted him the Hall of Fame. His peak, eight seasons from 23 to 30, 44 homer average, 116 RBI average, 993 ops, a 7-WAR season every year during those 8 years. The strike-shortened season in 94 included there for 111 games. Then he had the injury-shortened 95 season to 72 games. But, man, oh, man, won the 97 AL MVP, 10 gold gloves, 7 silver sluggers, got 99% of the vote to go to the Hall of Fame. He was one of the best to ever do it, one of my favorite players ever.
One of the best I ever saw, both in center field and a threat at the plate. He was a superstar, man. What a player.
Our thoughts today with the Unseld family after the passing of Wes Unseld. For Tom, Brendan, and Danny, Grant saying so long. Chad Dukes is up next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.